Would you please rise, please, while the Pascagoula High School Band, under the direction of Mr. Ronald A. Harrington, plays the national anthem. To begin today's program for the launching of the Polaris submarine tender Canopus AS-34, it's my pleasure at this time to present to you Mr. Fred J. Mayo, President of the Ingalls Shipbuilding Corporation, a division of Litton Industries. Mr. Mayo.
Well, I guess no use my talking about the rain. I know how you feel about it. We don't usually have rain in our launching, but today we've got it. Mrs. Sackett, Mrs. Barr, Senator Stennis, Admiral Lawrence, Admiral Brown, Admiral Sackett, Captain Gary, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. It is my pleasure and privilege to extend to each of you a hearty and cordial welcome to the launching of the Polaris submarine tender Canopus AS-34. The second vessel of this type to be built for our good customer, the United States Navy. The launching in itself is a very colorful and exciting occasion, an occasion long remembered by all who participate in and witness this event. But while we enjoy the color and excitement of today, let us not forget that which has gone before in making this event possible and that which will follow. Canopus has been conceived and designed by men who know the sea and its importance, not only to our national security, but to the security of the free world as well. Canopus is being built by men and women of great skill who know how to take the design and produce the amazing specimen of naval architecture and marine engineering which you see before you today. And following her delivery this summer, Canopus will be manned by dedicated men who will give the ship purpose, meaning, and direction. This ship, as she stands here, is a result of hard work and dedication by a great team effort. I am justly proud of our entire organization for their accomplishments in the construction of Canopus. I also wish to extend our thanks and give credit to the many others whose hard work is reflected in bringing this ship to the launching stage. The Bureau of Ships, headed by Rear Admiral W.A. Brockett. The Bureau of Weapons, Special Project Office, under the command of Rear Admiral I.J. Gallatin. The Atomic Energy Commission, headed by Vice Admiral H.D. Rickover, Captain Gary and his supervisor of shipbuilding staff, and the many vendors and subcontractors who have played an important part in its successful construction. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you a distinguished naval officer. We are indeed happy to have him with us today, for our program would not be complete without him. I speak of Rear Admiral Earl L. Sackett, former commanding officer of the 1st Canopus AS-9 and husband of our sponsor. Time will not permit me to go into detail concerning the background of this fine officer, especially his command and exploits with the 1st Canopus. Since our time is limited, I direct your attention to today's program, which justly gives recognition to Admiral Sackett, his former crew, and his gallant ship. It is fitting and proper that I present to you now Admiral Sackett, the former commanding officer of the 1st Canopus, who will present a commemorative plaque to Captain John M. Barrett, prospective commanding officer of the new Canopus. Admiral Sackett. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayo. Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I am particularly happy to greet old shipmates and other China sailors who have come here from many parts of the country to see the Canopus reborn. When I look at this magnificent ship, I am forcibly reminded of a promise made by the Navy more than 20 years ago. There is a history of World War II in the Pacific called Battle Report, written by Walter Carrig and Melbourne Kelly. It has a chapter dealing with the old Canopus, and the last page of that chapter reads as follows. Was the old lady a ship that was dead and gone forever? Was it true that there would never be another Canopus? Hell no, it was not true, said the Navy Department, though perhaps not exactly in those words. The old lady was too fine a ship to die. There would be a new Canopus, bigger, faster, stronger, and the gods of the sea being kind, almost as stout-hearted and true as the old lady herself. Well, here is the fulfillment of the Navy's promise. Much more than twice the size of the old Canopus, and built to service submarines of infinitely more power than the World War II models that we have. The Navy has truly made great strides in the past 20 years. As a sponsor's gift, my wife is having an oil painting prepared of the Canopus in action in Batam to be presented to the new Canopus. This painting will not be finished for some time, but the accompanying plaque is ready to be presented now. It reads as follows. USS Canopus AS-9, tender for Asiatic submarines 1925 to 1942. Predecessor of USS Canopus AS-34. Remained in Bataan to service submarines operating near Philippines after main service units left Manila area December 1941. Cut off by a rapid advance of Japanese forces, damaged by repeated bombings, Canopus continued to render valuable services to U.S. forces until Bataan fell, April 9, 1942, when she was scuttled to prevent capture. Her crew then fought in defense of Corregidor, where survivors were taken prisoner May 6, 1942. Captain Barrett, as the first commanding officer of the new Canopus, please accept this plaque from the commanding officer of the old Canopus and her crew.
Admiral Sackett, Mrs. Sackett, Mrs. Ward, on behalf of those of you who have built and are building this ship, and on behalf of the crew who will man her and operate her with pride, and in memory of the deeds that the Canopus did in contributing to our Navy and our country, I accept this plaque with pleasure and assure you it will have always have an honored place on the new Canopus.
Thank you, Pat Barrow.
Now I am pleased to present to you Captain John B. Gary, Supervisor of Shipbuilding, United States Navy, Pascagoula, who will have the honor of introducing to you two high-ranking and distinguished naval officers. Captain Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayo. Mrs. Sackett, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to take this opportunity to read a dispatch I received today from the Bureau of Ships, the Supervisor of Shipbuilding Pascagoula, and to Mr. F.J. Mayo, Ingalls Shipbuilding Corporation. Rear Admiral W.A. Brockett, Chief Bureau of Ships, SEN. Congratulations on the launching of Canopus. Regret I am unable to attend in person, but commend to you our able Assistant Chief for Shipbuilding, Rear Admiral J.A. Brown. Rear Admiral Brown is a native of our neighboring state, Tennessee. After graduating from the Naval Academy in 1936, he served 2 years in the old battleship USS West Virginia. He then went to Massachusetts Institute of Technology for a postgraduate in naval construction, for which he received a degree in Master of Science. Since graduating from MIT, he has served in many distinguished facets of the shipbuilding and ship repair business. Included in these are a tour in the Boston Navy Yard during the war, for which he received a letter of commendation with a ribbon from the Secretary of the Navy. He also served 3 different tours in the Bureau of Ships on tight desk work, but primarily in design of our new ships. He has served as both planning officer and production officer at the New York Naval Shipyard. He has had a tour of duty as supervisor of shipbuilding at New York Shipbuilding Corporation in Camden, New Jersey. He is now back in the Bureau serving as Assistant Chief of the Bureau for Design, Shipbuilding, and Fleet Maintenance. I take pleasure in presenting to you one of the Navy's outstanding construction engineers, Rear Admiral James A. Brown, U.S. Navy. Admiral Brown.
Thank you, Captain Gary. Senator Stennis, Admiral Loren, Mrs. Sackett, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. I welcome this opportunity as representative of the Chief of the Bureau of Ships to join you today for the launching of the submarine tender Canopus AS-34. And we are fortunate to have with us the gracious Mrs. Sackett, who will act as sponsor for this ship. It is especially appropriate that Mrs. Sackett play an important part in this event. As you know, her husband was commanding officer of the first Canopus. When Bataan fell, the crew of the original Canopus backed her off into deep water and scuttled her, and thus ended her valiant career. And Admiral Sackett later wrote an account of the ordeal that he and his courageous officers and crew endured aboard Canopus as the Japanese pounded the Philippines. Admiral Sackett and the officers and men of Canopus met this onslaught resolutely and fought the overwhelming forces opposing them with resourcefulness and determination. Their valor and their example may well serve as an inspiration for those who will serve their country in this new ship. We are honored to have with us Senator Stennis, the distinguished chairman of the Preparedness Investigating Subcommittee of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Senator Stennis has demonstrated a vigorous interest in and a thorough grasp of naval and military matters, and has had a great influence in the development of more effective operations of the defense agencies. Canopus will be as complex as the nuclear-powered Polaris submarine she will support. She will be a floating repair facility with 64 fully equipped shops. She will have a large crane with extremely accurate controls, which are required to load and unload Polaris missiles. She will have special nuclear support facilities and other special capabilities in order to supply the needs of our modern nuclear-powered submarine. She will be a fully-fledged supply center and will carry more spare parts than an aircraft carrier, and enough supplies to arm and fuel her submarines, feed and provide for the health and welfare of their crews for an extended period of time. She is designed to fully support 9 nuclear-powered submarines, with as many as 3 receiving complete alongside services simultaneously. She will provide the invaluable support needed by our Polaris forces in forward areas remote from the continental bases of the United States. It is impossible to overemphasize the importance of the contribution of the Canopus and similar ships make to the essential operations of our fleets at sea. Each modern new ship, such as the one being launched here today, strengthens the capability to meet our many responsibilities around the world.
To construct a ship like Canopus requires the application of a high degree of shipbuilding competence. The people of Ingalls Shipbuilding Corporation are demonstrating one aspect of this competence here today as we launch this ship. In addition, you at Ingalls are building 4 nuclear-powered submarines, 2 amphibious transport dock ships, and an amphibious assault ship. By so doing, you are making a tremendous contribution, not only to the nation's defense, but to the economy of this state as well. In this technically complex and economically competitive naval shipbuilding business, you have the opportunity to establish this yard as a top contender by your industry and your skill. I am confident that this ship will be a credit to our sponsor, Mrs. Sackett, the people of Ingalls who are building her, and the men of the Navy who will sail her. Thank you.
Thank you, Admiral Brown. Our next guest on the program is one of the Navy's outstanding submarine officers. Like Admiral Brown, he too is a Southerner, a native of North Carolina. He is a graduate of the Naval Academy class of 1930. After serving 2 years in the battleship California, he reported for instruction at the submarine school in New London, Connecticut. Since his graduation from the submarine school, he has risen steadily in the submarine force and has held every job in the chain of command until he has reached his present position as Commander, Submarine Force, Atlantic Fleet. Just before and during the war, he was commanding officer of 3 different submarines. At the start of World War II, he had command of the old USS R-16 in the Atlantic. He later made 5 successful war patrols in the Pacific as commanding officer of the USS Kingfish, and still later, 2 successful war patrols as commanding officer of the USS Sea Dog. He is credited with having destroyed more than 56,000 tons of enemy shipping while in command of the Kingfish and the Sea Dog. For his work in these 2 ships, he was awarded the Navy Cross, the Silver Star, and Gold Stars in lieu of 2 additional Silver Star awards. The Surface Navy has not been completely left out during his career. Besides his duty in the California, he served in the USS Bushnell, served as commanding officer of the USS Rockbridge, and commanding officer of the cruiser USS Macon. He also served as commander, Cruiser Division 3. No one in the Navy escapes Washington duty, and he is no exception, having served 3 different tours, primarily in the Office of Chief of Naval Operations. It is my pleasure to present to you Vice Admiral Vernon L. Lawrence, U.S. Navy. Admiral Lawrence.
Thank you, Captain. Mrs. Sackett, Senator Stennis, Mr. Mayo, members of the commissioning party, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. I think it is appropriate that we have Mississippi's distinguished senator with us today, John Stennis, since he and Mrs. Stennis took part in the recent launching of the USS Holland here, which was our first Polaris submarine tender. Senator Stennis was among the first in Congress to realize and foresee the strategic importance of a force of Polaris nuclear-powered submarines. He has been tireless in his energetic and articulate support of the Polaris program. The nation and our Navy owes him a debt of gratitude for this articulate support. I am privileged to be here at the launching of Canopus today and see it firsthand, this fine shipbuilding yard, which has contributed so much to our submarine Navy. Mr. Mayo, to you and your fine personnel, I add my congratulations for the 4 nuclear-powered submarines and the 2 Polaris submarine tenders you have built here. The Navy is indeed in your gratitude for this fine performance. As Canopus goes down the way today to join our arsenal of peace, I am confident that she will have a long and illustrious career in our submarine fort. Thank you.
Thank you, Admiral Lawrence. Ladies and gentlemen, 17 years ago, Mississippians elected a circuit judge from their midst and sent him to Washington to represent this state as one of its United States senators. Since that time, Senator John C. Stennis has compiled a record of diligent, dedicated, and devoted public service, not only to the state of Mississippi, but to the nation as a whole. A man of ability, capacity, and leadership, he is a ranking member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, the Senate Appropriations Committee, and the Senate Space Committee. 4 years ago, the Senate gave him an added key assignment and made him chairman of the powerful Senate Preparedness Investigating Committee, a post held by President Lyndon Johnson when he was a member of the Senate. Since becoming chairman of this watchdog committee, which oversees our national defense program, under his guidance, several major studies have been made of our military power, including our strategic weapons and weapons delivery system, embracing our whole national defense posture. The outstanding work of Senator Stennis in maintaining close supervision over our military preparedness has brought praise from both sides of the political aisle. His major committee assignments gave him the opportunity to participate regularly in top-level conference with the President, members of the Cabinet, and other high government officials, as well as the nation's foremost business leaders, engineers, and scientists. While his broad knowledge of and participation in the national and international affairs places him high at the council table of our nation, he is deeply conscious of and works untiringly in the special interest of the people of Mississippi. We at Ingalls are deeply indebted for his efforts in our behalf, one of the most important of which is the deepening of the Pascagoula Harbor in our channels. His advice and assistance concerning legislation affecting our welfare has always been immediately available, for which we are most appreciative. It is with gratitude and pride that I present to you a great American, a distinguished statesman, our own United States Senator John C. Stennis. Senator Stennis.
Thank you.
Chairman, friends of the Navy, Mr. Mayo, delightful friends and guests, you greatly honor me to invite me here today, and I warmly thank you for that invitation and for this most generous introduction. I remember about 2 years ago, I think it was, my friends, I spoke from this same platform under similar conditions and said that I could shorten my speech. But someone had told me that the ship couldn't be launched until a certain time anyway, which reminded me the old saying, time and tide wait for no one, was turning around a little, and we're going to have to wait for the tide. So you'll have to endure me now while we wait this one out to see the ship go down. I want to talk briefly to you about our United States Navy, about Ingalls and her wonderful staff and working crew, something about our own state that we love. My friend, our United States Navy is our first line of defense. And at this very moment, it roams the seven seas with fleets in the Mediterranean, in the Atlantic, in the Pacific, and elsewhere. Wherever there's a need for naval power to keep the peace, our Navy is there, literally a roaming policeman. By having this Navy with its great power, the strongest in the world, we control the seven seas. This gives us strength and commands respect. Without this naval power, I'm certain that most all of Asia would have already gone over into the communist orbit. Our carriers are floating air bases. Their planes are constantly on the alert, ready to serve in strikes on land or on sea. The quick and effective response of our carriers to the recent strikes that were ordered in Vietnam is an outstanding example. 7 minutes, only 7 minutes after the orders were given to strike, those carrier planes were on their way. And I've never been prouder of any vote that I cast in the Senate Appropriations Committee than one a few years ago that determined whether or not we would have an additional carrier. Our submarines, some of which were made right here in this yard, quietly extend their protecting arm around the world. Our Polaris missile submarines are a major part of our striking power in nuclear weapons, and they are capable of hitting accurately a target deep in the heart of the enemy's homeland from launching positions far below the sea surface. The officers and men of our Navy are of the very highest caliber. They are well trained and devoted to their duty. These men give our fleet a fighting spirit not excelled in any part of history. It is a source of great pride for Mississippians too, that more than 5,000 of her native sons and daughters have made their careers and their professions with the United States Navy and are stationed all the way around the world. Indeed, we can be proud of our Navy, its readiness, and its capability. But these superior weapons and well-trained people are effective only if they have ships of the very highest quality. We take great pride in Mississippi as well in Washington in the fact that the Navy has repeatedly turned to Ingalls for these high-quality ships, and they have never been disappointed. We take pride in the fact that the Ingalls is located here in Mississippi. And I especially take pride in the men and women, the watchmen and the craftsmen, who have made this illustrious record possible. And I'm looking now, I know, into the faces and within the sound of people in great numbers who have gone to make and continue to maintain this very fine record. Ingalls is consistently able to put in a low bid, and this is possible for seven reasons. Several. One is the investment in modern machines and tools of the very highest order, which makes Ingalls one of the finest shipbuilding plants in the nation. Another reason is the unusually high capability of Ingalls' management and staffs and assistants. The third, perhaps most important reason is the consistently high-quality workmanship of the skilled and semi-skilled workmen who build these ships. At the base of all this success is your willingness to do an honest day's work that ensures both quantity and quality production. This has made Ingalls the pacemaker of the shipbuilding industry in this nation. It was your capability that recently led Admiral Rickover to call me on the telephone in Washington on his return there from inspecting one of your recently built atomic-powered submarines to compliment you and your company on your very high-quality production. I take the greatest pride, and I know I speak for all Mississippians, in commending you on this wonderful record. These words are not mere idle compliments. They are backed up with solid facts of proven performance. This rare combination of labor and management at Ingalls is the first reason, the major reason, you have recently been awarded current contracts to construct, as you've already heard, the four naval nuclear-powered attack submarines, your amphibious transport docks, an amphibious assault ship, and you have now under current contract for at least 10 merchant ships. Pascagoula-built ships have participated in such international crises as those at Lebanon, the Suez, Cyprus, the Cuban quarantine, and Laos. They are now on station around the globe, keeping watch on the waters never for conquest, but for peace and for our protection. And at this very moment, the landing ship Doc Thomaston, the tanker Yukon, are in the area of the South China Sea where tension is mounting in South Vietnam and Indonesia. The landing ship Doc Spiegelgrove and the Polaris submarine Tender Holland are working for the Sixth Fleet in the Mediterranean. The LSTs Vernon County and Washoe County and the destroyer Parsons are in the Japanese waters, all built here in Ingalls. We're especially pleased that the Ingalls team was selected to build this Canopus. The building of the ship in the Mississippi shipyard is an example of how business and industry in each state, including our own, depend on the business and industry of every other state. It underscores the fact that our economy is not and cannot be confined within our own state borders. Materials and services from over 25 of the 50 states of the United States were used in the building of this ship that you now see. The engine turbine came from New Jersey. The electronics equipment from California. The special boat and missile crane came from Seattle, Washington. The engine controls came from Connecticut. The propellers came from New York. The paint from Louisiana. The castings from Tennessee and the steel from Alabama. As Mississippi's largest industry, you have been a pace setter that has inspired all of us in this state. The per capita wealth of income of Mississippi has increased more than six times than what it was when Ingalls Shipbuilding Corporation began its operations in this state. You purchase annually more than $50 million worth of material from all parts of the United States. You have launched vessels here valued at more than $1.5 billion. These facts emphasize that it's for industries to be successful, we must also be a vital growing part of American industry. No one knows better than you, both workers and management, what it would mean to your livelihood and to the economy of your city and county if we should attempt to isolate ourselves from the rest of the United States. We cannot set ourselves apart from the nation without suffering unbearable consequences. The future economic welfare of every Mississippian who owns the business, who works for a living, depend upon whether we can maintain an environment in which business and industry can grow and expand. It may be necessary for us at times to adjust to some situations we dislike and disapprove. But order and respect for law will be maintained. We all have a part to play in maintaining the kind of attitude and circumstances that will promote prosperity and move us forward to a day of more and better jobs. Others will look to you, as managers and employees of the state's largest industry, and will be influenced by your leadership. I urge you to meet this task equally well as you have met the responsibility of building great ships, so the nation and the Navy, the people of this great state, are ever grateful and thankful to the fine management of this company, the splendid workmen that you have. Now, friend, I don't think there's any problem on the horizon of the future that we need to be afraid of. We can face whatever comes to us with fortitude and endurance and with faith. With faith in our great system of government, with faith in our nation, with faith in each other, and more than that, with faith in an eternal God, to whom we can always look with confidence, from whom we can always gain strength. May God sustain us as we make our way. I thank you.
We thank you, Senator Stennis, and we appreciate the time you have taken from your busy schedule to come here today. And we thank you sincerely for your very kind remarks. And now, folks, if you will please rise, the Reverend Arthur M. Snyder, Jr., pastor of the Presbyterian Church here in Pascagoula, will deliver the invocation and bless the ship. Reverend Snyder.
Let us pray. Almighty God, the creator and sustainer of the universe, thou art holy and thou art good. Be present now to bless us as we, thy children, thy creatures, look to thee. We are grateful for the privilege accorded us as we are gathered to participate in the launching of this ship of the United States Navy. We thank thee for all that this day means in the lives of each one of us. We ask thy blessing upon those who govern us and upon those who defend us. We are grateful for all of the planning and the skills and all of the labor being used for the construction and the completion of this vessel. Grant, we pray thee, that this vessel may travel in peaceful waters, but that if armed conflict should be thrust upon us, may she bring credit to the traditions of the Navy. Bless the officers and the men who will sail her upon the high seas. Bless the ship's sponsor and all who participate in these ceremonies. Conduct in safety the voyages of this ship, and may we express our thankfulness for thy merciful providence by a constant devotion to duty and a sincere faith in thee. Thou art our strength, thou art our shield, and we commend ourselves and all dear to us unto thee, and we make our prayer in the name of him whose commands even the wind and the sea obey, Jesus our Lord. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend Snyder. Now, folks, we have many distinguished representatives here of our government, our officers of our armed forces, and officials of the local government, distinguished civic leaders and businessmen. I'd just like to recognize a few of them. We have some time that we can do this in, and I'd like to proceed to do that. I'd like to introduce Rear Admiral C.B. Jones, Chief of the Legislative Affairs for the Navy Department, Washington. Admiral Jones. Rear Admiral D.F. Smith, Jr., Chief of Naval Air Base Training Command, Pensacola and Mrs. Smith. Rear Admiral Henry W. Goodall, U.S. Navy retired, former executive officer of the Canopus AS-9, and Mrs. And now we have with us the former officers and crew members of the old Canopus, with whom we are very honored to have with us. Will these gentlemen please stand and be recognized? We also have as honored guests a group of World War II prisoners of the Japanese, some of whom are also crew members of the old Canopus. Will these gentlemen please stand? Captain John M. Barrett, Special Projects Office, Washington, and prospective commanding officer of the Canopus AS-34. Captain H.C. Wirt, Commanding Officer, U.S. Naval Air Station, Pensacola, and Mrs. Wirt. We have here Commander Scoggins, Executive Officer of the Canopus. I don't know where he is. Colonel K.A. Kavanaugh, Deputy Commander, Keesler Air Force Base, and Mrs. Kavanaugh. I guess it. Colonel John C. Evers, Commander, Technical School, Keesler Air Force Base, and Mrs. Evers. Lieutenant Commander J.M. Taylor, Atomic Energy Commission, Pascagoula. Mr. Paul T. DeLeo, Special Projects Office, Washington. We have with us also an officer from Litton Industries, Mr. John B. Cogan. He's Vice President of Litton Industries. Can I get here? Didn't stand the ring, I guess. And Mr. Jim McLean, also of Waterman Steamship Company over in Mobile. Really couldn't stand the ring. I don't know what. Honorable Ben Briggs, Mayor of Pascagoula. I don't know whether Ben's out here or not. There he is. Fine. Now I want to introduce Mrs. Faith, Kathy, and Ann Barr, daughters of Mrs. Hoyle R. Barr, the matron of honor today. Oh. There are many others here who I'd like to introduce, but time will get on here, and it's a 3 o'clock trigger launch, and then we will get on. So therefore, we approach now the highlight of this occasion, the christening and launching of this important and complex naval vessel. Sponsoring such a ship as the Canopus is considered far more than a social honor, as so fully recognized by the selection of our sponsor today, who is Mrs. Earl L. Sackett of Coronado, California. Mrs. Sackett is the wife of Admiral Sackett, introduced previously by the former commanding officer, who was as the former commanding officer of the first Canopus. It is indeed then a pleasure and honor to have her as a sponsor of the Canopus today. Mrs. Sackett has selected as her matron of honor her daughter, Mrs. Hoyle R. Barr of Grand Prairie, Texas. So I am privileged to present to you at this time our sponsor, Mrs. Earl Sackett, and her daughter and matron of honor, Mrs. Hoyle R. Barr. Now, while Mrs. Sackett and Mrs. Barr are taking their position on the stand, I would like to ask Mr. Bill Guest, Jr., Vice President of our company, to explain some of the launching procedure. Where are you, Bill?
He's right over here. Mrs. Sackett, would you like to say a little
something? I'll be very happy.
Mrs. Sackett would like to say a few words, and we'd just like to have you listen.
This is one of the proudest moments of my life, and I have been very anxious to sponsor a new Canopus. I was invited to do so 20 years ago, and it was canceled due to the end of the war, and I've had an unfinished feeling ever since. So this is the climax of long career.
Some Girl Scouts out across the street. Look at them, they're coming up now.
Thank you, Mr.
At the time of launching, it's necessary to receive wedge rallies lift by these blocks to lift the ship up so that the shoring can be knocked out from the sides, and then by removal of the sides of sandboxes down the length of the vessel, allow the sand to slowly trickle out and the ship settle down in its launching cradle and on its launching ways, which have been placed under the vessel. At that time, the ship is retained, of course, by the after dog shores, which hold it on the ways, and then as those are removed, it's entirely dependent on the trigger. The schedule is that the trigger readiness is set for 2:55, and the final clearance made so that the trigger can be released at precisely 3 o'clock. At that time, Canopus will be christened and given her name and receive her baptism in the waters of the Singing River. After Canopus is launched and enters the river, she'll be pivoted by drag chains that run down the side of the waves to slow the progress of the vessel in the water and cause it to pivot with the bow north. And at that time, tugs will attach lines to the vessel and take it down to the outfitting basin for the completing work, the installation of the final items, the testing and readiness for sea trials, and then, of course, delivery to the Navy. This ship was, keel was laid last March, 64, and will deliver in September this year. The platform is being cleared, as you heard, on the PA system, and the trigger is now ready for launching. The final alerts have been given to clearing out aft of the ship. In a few minutes, the signal will be given to the river to clear the traffic. Response to signal light.
60 seconds to trigger release.
60 seconds. Seconds.
What's the idea, man?
Fifteen seconds.
10 seconds.
10, 9, 8, 7.
Here is the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
There she goes. And the Canopus is starting down the ways. You hear the band in the background playing the traditional anchors away. As Canopus is very the heaviest ship ever launched on the Gulf Coast. It slides very rapidly, very, very fast launch. This huge Canopus, 12,000 tons of monster sliding down this riverbank. A beautiful, beautiful sight even in this rain and wind. Cold weather, Canopus is almost now off the waves. Still entering the water of the Singing River. Flags flying, the band playing. It's a very, very beautiful sight. Fully waterborne. Drag chains that I spoke to you a moment ago will be taking up now on the side to slow the ship and turn it there. The other ship is pivoting in the river. The bow is moving toward the north upstream. And the tugs are coming in now to attach the lines on and take her down. At this time, we'll end the broadcast program, broadcast portion of this program for WPMP. This is Bill Guest speaking.